You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
I am joined here today by friend of the channel, the pod, the brand, my friend, Stefan Milo. How you doing, man?
Good. Very good.
I'm good. You're in Portland now? It's always
happening. Sunny Portland, Oregon. This has got the Portland like Timbers shirt on even today.
Okay. You a big football guy?
I mean, it is the best sport, probably, but I don't obsess over it.
Fair enough.
Okay. That or tennis or rugby. Those are the top three.
I played rugby once at summer camp and I was taught by an English guy and it felt pretty cool.
There you go.
Yeah.
You needed to be taught by a Welsh guy. They're the real rugby lovers.
Oh yeah.
They love it the most out of everyone, I think. Yeah.
How like separate, I've never been to Wales. Like how separate is Wales from England? Like I know they have their own identity and everything.
Well, it's all in the United Kingdom, right? So in that sense, yeah. It's not separate at all. You can just walk right in and we share the same government and all sure. of that stuff. But they do have a distinct culture, the Welsh. They do. They do. It's not just little England. I'm going to put this out there. I like the Welsh the most out of the UK peoples. I think they're the best people in all the UK. They're the friendliest, I think. They're just good fun, and it's a really peaceful place to be, Wales. I like it a lot. I'm from the English side of the Wales border in a city called Worcester, so it's just half an hour from Wales. And I did have a bit of a chip on my shoulder when I was a kid because I played rugby, and a lot of the teams we'd play were Welsh teams. And so, you know, I spent a significant part of my childhood being beaten by Welsh children. But I'm totally over it now. And I think they're great.
Good. Okay. So it's kind of like walking from New York into New Jersey. It's not like walking into a different country. I guess one could argue New Jersey is a different country.
It would be, I mean, well, no. Well, we're straight into the political action here.
Oh, sorry.
Is the differences between the UK nations more distinct than any other political subdivision? It's an interesting one. We like to think so. We like to think so. We don't refer to like England, Scotland and Wales as states. We think of them still as nations. And certainly people feel like there's a strong identity there. So I would say it's more than walking from New York to New Jersey. But we obviously, you know, have so much in common too.
Yeah.
I mean, they literally have a different language. So that's more than New York and New Jersey. And the language, the signs in the street change as well.
Okay, I've heard that there's like it's in a different writing there.
Yeah. I mean, their language is, you know, it's a Celtic language, so it goes back millennia, and they have their own like written histories and stuff like that. So the Welsh, I would say much. Maybe this is my British bias, but much more of a difference than New York and New Jersey.
Okay, that's fair.
But we all like, you know, bacon sandwiches. We all put eat bangers and mash and stuff. So.
Nice. We have bacon, egg, and cheese in New York. Those are pretty good.
Yeah, you need brown sauce.
Is that like a gravy?
Nah. It's like a vinegary ketchup, I would say. We call it brown sauce. Okay, slightly more vinegary, slightly more spicy ketchup. And we eat it a lot with breakfast.
Okay. I've had the malt vinegar with fish and chips, but that's different, I guess.
Yeah, no, this is more like ketchup. You know, it's a dipping sauce. I had a bacon sandwich with brown sauce today for breakfast.
Cheerio.
Cool. Behind me.
Nice. So yeah. How you been, dude? Like you've been busy. I can tell.
I've been busy.
Cranking out videos. The Vox of Archaeology.
I wouldn't go that far, but I try.
You're getting there.
I got a bit of a dilemma at the minute, man. A bit of a dilemma because I was going to record a video today about Dragon Man.
Who's that?
Dragon Man is this big cranium found in Harbin, China, about 5 years ago, maybe 6-7 years ago now. Big, beefy skull. And then they just released a DNA study on it yesterday that confirms it was Denisovan. So Which is great. It's fascinating. I love it. I can't wait to talk about it, but it just means I have to rewrite the video that I was literally going to record.
Oh no.
Tomorrow. But it's better this way than any other way. You know, better it came out. It would be worse Correct. If I made the video and then the next day the paper came out confirming it was Denisovan. That would be worse, but
yeah.
But still it's frustrating, and I've got a sponsor deadline. I don't know if I can change it quickly enough. So now I don't know what to make. I don't know what to make. I'm sat here thinking, what? I've got the entirety of global history in front of me. What video should I make like by next week?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's kind of the thing with Paleoanth, man. It like, I think we might've talked about this last time. It changes so fast, and yeah. It's like all opinion based kind of, and then whatever study comes out. But like, yeah, it's just overnight. And right before we hopped on, I got two new dog DNA articles from the Americas that I've been trying to do a video on dogs in the Americas, because it's like the biggest topic people want. But there's a new study every day, and I got to wait. But yeah, Paleoanth for sure. And is it because of genetics that it changed that fast? Or?
Yes. So apparently, it was always a possible and perhaps likely that this was a Denisovan. Because we know they live in the area at that same time. So it was always possible. I heard they failed to get DNA from the skull. But what they can do is individual proteins. I'm going to get this wrong because I'm not, I don't know enough about it, but they're analyzing proteins instead, which survive better. And they can't give you as much information as like a genome, but they can give you enough information where you can say like, okay, these people are like pretty closely related and therefore must be the same thing. So yeah, so that just came out. So just sat here thinking like, I got to rewrite that video, but I don't know if I can rewrite that video for the sponsor deadline, which is the harsh, brutal economics of YouTube.
Right.
I know everyone hates the sponsorships, but.
But you got to keep the shop running.
Got to keep the shop running. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have 4,000 bottles of brown sauce in my garage, and that's expensive. You know, I've got to do something.
Do you have to, I know you don't have 4,000, but do you have to import that? I've never seen it. Or you get the British section at the store.
I got a few shops that have some British goods. So I got it. There's enough British people here in Portland to support that kind of thing. There's actually a lot of British people here in Portland.
Why is that, do you think?
I heard they all work at Nike.
Oh, okay.
Basically the closest supermarket to Nike headquarters is full of British stuff. And I asked them about that, and they said Nike has 600 British employees.
Well, there you go.
So, you know,
their families.
Who's doing it? Just do it. The British are doing it. Okay. We're making your Nikes.
A little Nike swoosh on a ship of the line.
Yeah. I have no way of verifying that. This is just, you know, what someone told me in the supermarket, but that's a reliable source to me.
My aunt lived in England for years, and every Christmas we get her the, not Mars bars, but there's like some cookie chocolate thing, Maltesers. There you go.
Oh,
She loves those. That's her inner stocking.
Yeah, America doesn't know anything about Maltesers, man. Oreo, there's nothing on Maltesers.
America's favorite cookie. okay, so you were doing something, Denisovans, you took over, and they made it Denisovan.
Well, it means that Denisovans might have to change their name, too. Oh. Because Denisovans was never a species name. It's just sort of a placeholder name. And the species name that was suggested for the skull in China is Homo longi. So now Denisovans may have to be called Homo longi. Because, you know, you have to do that thing where it's like, who got the name first, and everyone has to go with that name.
Right.
Homo longi got the name first.
I thought it was Homo sapiens Denisovans, but maybe I'm tripping.
Well,
yeah, that's me wishful thinking.
I don't know. I don't know how common like that subspecies designation is used, to be honest. No one really calls Neanderthals Homo sapiens Neanderthalensis, I don't think.
Yeah, or at least in like conversation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think Homo Neanderthalensis is the other one. We've had plenty of talks on that. But, you know, whether it's a it's its own species or it's a subspecies, I don't know. So Dennis Denisovans have to get their name changed now.
Potentially Homo longi. Because it's from the, I'm going to butcher this because it's Chinese. Heilongjiang region of China. And that means a Black Dragon River. It's a pretty gangster name, actually.
That is a really cool name.
Yeah. So Homo longi is like dragon man. It means like dragon homo. So that's kind of cool. I think that's a better name than Denisovans, dragon man.
Yeah, 100%. Cool. So, yeah, this will come out probably 3 weeks from now, maybe more. 3 weeks? So maybe that'll change by then. But this is June 19th, we're filming this.
Breaking news. As of recording, this is breaking news. Yeah.
I really want to start, like, I don't need another project, but like a breaking or an archaeology news channel, like Joke World.
Yeah.
But for archaeology. But it would just take too much time.
Joke World?
It's like stand-up comedy, or like comedy podcast, sports center, I would describe it as. It's kind of funny. Like, comedy who was on podcast. What podcast this week, or, you know, whose special came out this week.
So this is like a news show, but for comedy?
Yeah, and it's like, this week, Tyre is released on Netflix with starring Shane Gillis and stuff like that. But it's like, this week, Homo Neanderthalensis might get its name changed or something like that. I'm sure, you know, SciShow is kind of that, but something more relevant to the archaeology we do in our little world.
It could be a segment if you don't want to make a whole new thing. Just make a segment of your show.
This is why you're the idea guy. That's smarter. Rather than do my whole own thing. Because it's clippable, shareable. This week, Flint Dibble got called X or Y.
No, just do like a 10-minute intro to the show with the latest breakdown of the news.
I think I started the podcast off saying I was going to do that, and I just remembered now that I never followed through on that promise. So
let's give people breaking news, man. What are the breaking news is there?
White Sands last night.
I saw that.
That now this just says that the dates are sound. I still think they're sloth footprints, but
you still think they're sloth footprints?
Yeah, because I'm it's another video I want to do. But if you think about it, the way, and I'm more of a pessimist when it comes to this stuff, but the way the footprints are there, like it was in the, how would I put it? The way it's published, it looks like they're like footprints like they were at Laetoli. But really, it was like stains in the ground that they believed were footprint shaped and scooped them out into that shape, which is why one of them has like six toes.
But the team, it's not the team. Like, they're familiar with the sloth footprints too, though. Right. It's
I would
not
think
like,
so. Yeah.
This, I think they are. I think this is not like the first.
Not their first sloth rodeo.
It's not. Yeah. There's lots of sloths there.
Which is why it leads me to believe that too. And it's like, maybe they were just slothy looking and they're scooped out that way. But I'd like to get one of the researchers on and talk to them about it.
I don't know.
But it's just the same with the pre-Clovis stuff when it comes out. It's always something not tool related, or you have to squint your eye to like believe it's a tool. But the White Sands is a pretty definitive, okay, we have footprints and the dates are sound.
That is the big dilemma with any pre-Clovis site. Where's the tools? Where are they living? It is literally always like that. I don't know these are sloth footprints.
And I hate being that guy. You don't think so?
Well,
real quick. They look the most human to me of any of the footprints we've seen. I just typed in publish. I meant to say, what's it called? White Sands.
I think they're human footprints. I think they're human footprints, to be honest.
Yeah. They look more human than the other sloth ones, but I'd still like to see them myself, or like the pictures before they were scooped out, if that makes sense. I don't think they've showed those. And it's been a few years since the main article came out. But all that said, to your point, the paper that came out last night by Vance Holiday, who's at Arizona, is saying that the dates are sound, because there were papers that came out, rebuttals before that, saying that the dates were all wrong.
Yeah.
But there is some pollen stuff going on. Yeah.
I didn't fully read the paper, but they dated like another section of it. It's like the same layer, I think, but
like
at
that.
A different spot, and the dates matched the location with the footprints.
Yeah. So it's something like that, or I talk about that every, like, it's something breaking like that every week. or every other week. Interesting. But a lot of it's just going to end up being paleo or dogs. But there's other... I mean, paleo is
big dog news.
Big dog, yeah.
Big dog news. That's what you should call it, man. Big dog news.
Just put a picture of a Great Dane. What came out yesterday? There was another one. Yeah. Ancient DNA reveals new clues about the incredible journey of dogs in the Americas. That's Oxford. And then another one. Analysis reveals that Jamestown colony residents ate dogs with indigenous ancestry. So that's kind of fun. I think that was last year, though. But genetics are the way to figure out dogs. You're not going to find dog bones at a lot of sites, and they're also NAGPRA if they're buried correctly. So that's a tough thing to deal with.
Huh. So dogs, what?
What are you looking up now?
I'm looking up this dog DNA, because I'm trying to see, does it line up with the timings of supposed human arrivals in the Americas?
Well, that's the thing. The dog DNA, that new one basically says that it was hard for them to get to South America, which we've known. The Inca randomly get dogs by the time the Spanish are there, but it's like they just kind of appear in the record.
Hmm.
But dogs didn't do well in the tropics going down there. In like central, I guess, because they're sneaking off and drinking putrid water in the jungle and they're not used to it. But long story short, when dogs are domesticated in Siberia and split off to like old world dogs and new world dogs, that's right about the time of like 15,000 years ago when people should be getting here.
Yeah.
And then the oldest dog remains in the Americas. It's a Coster site in Illinois, and that's 10,000 years. So that's the Holocene. But surely there's a dog that came with Clovis people. We just haven't seen evidence of it yet. So I can't say for sure.
Well, but we don't have like how much outside of the tools, how much do we know about Clovis people?
You know, about their diet breadth, basically, their tools. They like to use ochre, a lot of hide scraping. And that's about it.
Do we have any
bone rods, I guess?
Like clear cut residential sites?
They're like Barger Gulch would be Folsom, not Clovis, but Laprelle, the one I was working at, definitely had houses there, but nothing like definitive of here's like a mammoth hut that they had.
Mm.
Or like
it's an interesting one. There's early American sites, they're very. Oh, maybe I'm wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like they're very ephemeral.
Yeah.
It's hard to see what's going on.
Absolutely. Because it's just stone and you get some bone. Like this, the site that I was working at, you can clearly see this is a Paleolithic occupation. Like they're doing all the hide scraping, they're doing this, they're butchering bison, they're butchering mammoth. Like it's a clear site. But other sites like the Topper site I worked at, which is just a big quarry in South Carolina, all you see is they're broken in half Clovis points they're trying to flute and flakes and stuff. No houses, no nothing, because it's too acidic for that to stay. But it is evidence that like stone tool industry to me is the evidence I'd like to see. Because Homo erectus got to basically Australia using bifacial tools and leaving breadcrumbs. But then apparently pre-Clovis has been here 130,000 years, if we're to believe Cerruti, not leaving a single biface behind, which is very odd to me.
I find it hard to believe. I find it hard to believe personally.
Yeah.
Once you get to 130, because it's 130, it means it's for if Cerruti is real, that site was not made by Homo sapiens.
No, it would have been whatever Dragon Man is.
Yeah, it would have been something like that. But here's a question. Did Dragon Man make it to the Americas, though? And I'm going to tell you about a site.
Okay. Yeah.
We don't know. We don't know. Yeah, here we go. What's the name of this site?
An American site?
No, Russian site.
Oh.
What's the name of this site? La, 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 la. Oh, yeah. Deering. D-I-R-I-N-G. In Russia,
okay.
In Siberia. So there's some debate about the dating of this site, whether it's like 200,000 years old or 400,000 years old. Either way.
Okay. That's some stone tools that look real, kind of.
Yeah. And more importantly, it's really far north in Siberia. It's like level with Alaska, if you put it on Google Maps.
Okay, I see it now.
And so, well, you know, it's kind of getting close to Beringia, man. It's kind of getting close to Beringia up there.
Yeah.
And I would bet, I would, if I had to bet 10,000 bottles of brown sauce, like did like an archaic Homo species like Neanderthals or Dragon Man or anything like that. Maybe not make it south of the ice, but make it to Beringia and therefore Alaska. I think yeah. I would bet yes. I think I would bet yes.
I could see that. Like,
I don't know they made it south of that ice, but
to Nebraska, no. But
yeah, that yeah. ice, I think, was a real major obstacle. But I mean, by the time they're in northern China and Siberia, they're kind of close already. They're kind of close already.
Yeah.
So,
and if you're to follow the Aleutian Islands up there from Japan, if it's icy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think people forget Beringia is massive because Alaska massive. Itself is massive. So,
yeah. Yeah. So I think they're up there. I think they're up there. But I don't think they went south into California. I think if you'd have breached that ice and made it into like warm, tropical, nice areas, temperate mm-hmm. areas, why didn't they just like spread out like they did everywhere else in the world?
Yeah, you know. Fair enough. And so, they seem to like caves, Neanderthals and Denisovans, especially because their thermoregulatory technology wasn't there yet.
Yeah.
Based on what we know. Though there is a big bone needle at one of the Denisovan caves. They would have been in caves on the coast, which is all submerged now. So you can't tell unless they found caves like in inland Oregon somewhere.
I mean, there are plenty of caves, Paisley Caves, places yeah. like that. I just don't think they did it. I think we'd have found the evidence by now.
I agree.
Watch this clip being like cut to like 10 years later when we have lots of evidence for it.
Yeah. My book's taken off the shelves. Yeah. What's the most compelling evidence for pre-Clovis that you've found? And if this is controversial, we don't have to talk about it.
It's not controversial.
Okay.
I mean, if White Sands are a human footprints, then
right.
it's hard to argue with that. I think they are. I mean, I did the video on the site in Idaho, whose name now escapes me, right by the Nez Perce Reservation.
I remember that video too.
Yeah, what's the name of the place?
Is it a cave?
No cave. It's a river site.
I know which one you're talking about.
But it's like 16,000 years old. If the dating is to be believed, and these are for sure human-made stone points. Like there's no debate about that. These are human stone
Cooper's
points.
Cooper's Ferry. Yeah.
And they're really similar to stone points that are being made on the other side of Pacific at the same time, which is yeah. the kind of evidence you would perhaps expect. So
yeah,
I think humans were for sure here before Clovis. I just think it was the pioneer population. I don't think the humans were sort of from living across America from Brazil to Alaska, you know, before right. the Clovis period. Clovis might not have been the first on the continental landmass of North America, but I think were they the first in lots of places in North America? Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Were the Clovis people the first to make it to the East Coast, for example? I don't know.
Seems they're the most populated. More Clovis points are found in the East than the West.
Yeah.
That's kind of just bias of how much has been excavated out there versus like rural Wyoming and Montana.
But do you think that's the only reason?
I think it's both. I think it's excavation bias with, you know, people tilling them up. And there's probably a lot more that were destroyed in like, you know, the 1700s too, but also it's more populated on the East Coast now than the West Coast today. So even back then, due to all the rivers and the climate, I think it was just more populated and they did better then, would be my guess, unless you had something else.
I got nothing else.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like,
if you look
at the PIDBA map, I can put that up. Like PIDBA, you can see the heat map. Like the eastern U.S. is just utterly dominated by Clovis points, whereas the west isn't. But I think it's just a little bit of sample bias, but also people just have populated that area that long the whole time.
Yeah. This is what I think a little bit though about if pre-Clovis people were like coast to coast across the whole of the Americas, why don't we have a heat map of those tools? Because this isn't just tools there being found by archaeologists, right? These are tools that are being found when roads are being built and houses are being made and
collectors, private land.
Yeah. And it's not like only archaeologists find archaeological sites. Far, far from it.
Right.
So just where are all these tools? But I think, and the other tricky issue is with DNA. When I've asked geneticists about when they think people made it to the Americas, they often say like 15,000 to 18,000 years ago.
Geneticists say that?
Hey?
Geneticists are saying that?
I think so, yeah.
Cool.
And so, you know, if there's a site much, much earlier than that, it's not necessarily the modern Native Americans are the descendants of that population, right? Which is probably quite a controversial thing to say to some people, but that kind of thing happens all the time in the Paleolithic. Like the earliest Homo sapiens sites in Europe, as far as we're aware, like modern Europeans are not their descendants, you know, because it was so long ago. So that wouldn't be to single out the Americas as like different in any way, but.
Right.
It's an interesting one.
Okay. Cause I haven't been keeping up to date with the genetics as much, so I'll check that. But my safe bet, I wouldn't say I'm Clovis first, but like I'm kind of like you said, Clovis is the very first clear tool industry technology culture that's on the continent. Like if you were to look at the Gravettian or the, you know, Argnashian or whatever is in China at the same time, I forget what it's called. Like it's a very, Clovis is like a defined, we have a toolkit, there's an industry, there's a culture. But if there were exploratory bands before that, it'd be ludicrous of me to say that was impossible. Like that probably seems to be the case. But it's just like, by the time Clovis is around, Clovis in Wyoming could trade with somebody in probably Tennessee. And if they didn't speak the same dialect of whatever language they had the same points at least, and they could talk about, like, you know, whereas pre-Clovis, it's like, if you really squint and look at this, it kind of is a flake, and we found it in this Mexican cave. And if you look at all these fancy graphs we have, it is human. And it's like, it's very strange, but I'm open to it. And a lot of the stuff coming out of Brazil is interesting too. I think Bruce Bradley just went down there to check it out.
The Brazil is an interesting one. Yeah. I need to make a better video on that. I made a little video about that, about some of the problems with these early Brazil sites. I'm not necessarily like coming down hard on them, but just saying the problem that the critics have with them. And one of the archaeologists who excavated these sites reached out and was like, "Oh man, we should make a video, man. You got to hear me explain these things a little bit better." So I'm sure I'll make that this year.
Do you get a lot of people, sorry to segue, that ask you to like, can I make a video with you kind of thing? Or is it more of you reaching out to people?
Well, it's hard for me to say because I have a little bit of a problem with the contact form on my website at the minute, which the problem is entirely in my head because too many people were sending me like negative emails. So I stopped checking it.
Gotcha.
I actually got into my head. I was like, oh, I'm going to check. I'm going to see what's going on. And this was like 2 weeks ago. And I opened the first one and it was someone criticizing my thumbnails. It was like, oh God, I just can't. It's so hard to bring, like, I know this is, no one wants to hear a YouTuber complain like, oh, woe is me, YouTuber, but
You're in company.
Yeah. But it is hard to have to see so many opinions on what you do all the time. Like when I've worked other jobs.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't see thousands of opinions about what I've done.
Yeah.
You know, And it can mess with your head a little bit. So potentially many people are reaching out to me every single day to make a video. I suspect not though. I suspect not. Mainly I reach out to people. But it does happen every now and again. Yeah. I've got a couple of videos in the works now from people who've reached out to me.
Oh, good.
One I've really got to make. I've been putting it off so long because I wanted to film this on location. And that's been really tricky because I've got two young kids. But who was our ancestor when the dinosaurs died? Do we know that? And if we don't know that, why don't we know that? And, you know, I just think that's an interesting question.
Would it have been a rodent-like mammal or the primate? We had primates by then, I think.
That's the big debate. When did the primates start? That's the big debate. It seems to be around that time.
Okay. At least in the movie Dinosaur, there were lemurs.
But I don't know about lemurs. Yeah, I think they haven't evolved yet. but
that's a good video.
Whatever. Yeah, we were certainly like, even if the primate, group had diverged by that point, we were still tiny. Like it seems. We were like the size of guys. Barely bigger than a hamster back then, to be honest. Wow. And now look at us. Now look at us, T-Rex. Yeah. Who's laughing now?
Drilling liquid dinosaurs out of the earth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I drive you to work, T-Rex.
That's a good point, too. Yeah, that's a great topic. You had one that came out recently that I really enjoyed. I didn't watch your most recent one. Yeah, sorry. sometimes it pops up. It's like I said this to History Time yesterday too. Like his, I can leave on in the background and just hear them. But yours, it's such visual storytelling. I want to like commit to it. And then I just never get around to fully watch. Unless I'm like, all right, I'm going to watch his video. But the one I recently watched, let me pull it up. Soil chemistry, soil DNA.
Yeah, DNA from dirt. Yeah, sedimentary ancient DNA.
I meant That's to text you about one. That. When I was working at Laprelle almost a decade ago now, they were doing that at the site, trying to like do paleo DNA stuff out of the soil. And I had no idea. Like, I just thought that was something people did all the time. I didn't realize it was like cutting edge research at the time.
It's pretty cutting edge. Yeah.
And then I watched a video. I was like, oh yeah, this is like legit. I should have really paid attention.
Well, I would say this is a tricky one. It is cutting edge, but in theory, it has been around for a long time. But just the economics of doing genetic studies have improved so much that now it's viable. Like 20, 30 years ago, to try and take 100 genetic samples from a specific site would be like, it'd be the most expensive project in all of archaeological history. Like, but now just the economics have improved that we can just sequence more and more DNA. So the technology has in theory been around for a while. It's just now it's cheap enough to actually put into regular use, semi-regular use.
How did you find out about that project and like what made you reach out to them?
It was a famous study. It was actually quite an old study. It came out in 2021. I say that it's not old, but there is that sense that, you know, everything, there's so many discoveries at the minute. There is that sense that 4 years ago is old, but it was just, I don't know. It's just an interesting study. Again, it was about Denisovans. So anything about that sort of catches my eye. The geneticist Elena Zavala was very kind because I actually filmed that interview I did with her. That was actually the second time I interviewed her, and the first interview had never made it to Broadline. Oh, no. Because, well, I had literally not slept the night before and not out of any fun way. I wasn't doing anything fun, but
just up thinking about mistakes in your life and stuff.
Yeah, no, I was up thinking about YouTube. I don't even want to say.
But sure.
I'll tell you off camera.
Okay.
It involves lots of brown sauce, but,
all right. Fair enough.
So I literally hadn't slept the night before, but, so I was just really groggy. And then not long after that, they released a study where they actually extracted the DNA from the pendant. I don't know if you saw that part of the video.
Uh, It's been a few weeks since I watched it, but I did watch the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. Okay. He watched the whole thing. Didn't watch the last 5 minutes, clearly.
I'll look it up real quick.
You're caught out now, David. It's caught in a lie.
Hey, but if I type in Stefan on YouTube, you're the third one that comes up. So.
That's great.
Props. Dependent.
And so I was just like, oh gosh, I didn't want to make the video without that information. And so she was kind enough to agree to another video.
Oh, good. Is it at the end of the video? Oh, no, I see it. Okay. Yeah. Oh, like the tooth. Is that an elk tooth? What is that?
It is a deer tooth. Yeah.
Okay. Oh yeah. It'd be deer, not elk here. Cool. Okay.
So, I did they extracted human DNA from that successfully. From the DNA, presumably, of the person who was wearing it. And
just from like skin cells and stuff on
them.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's crazy. You should watch the whole video, David. That's how crazy it is.
I'll put the thing here. I did 10 years ago at that same site, like just to do lipid analysis on it, because it just blew my mind that a Clovis point, they could extract mammoth DNA from it. And I wondered how that, this seemed magic to me, but you got to just take a tiny little thing, get in the cracks of the stone, and then you just scrape out essentially dried fat from the blood of the mammoth, like it's cholesterol.
Yeah.
And then you send that off to a lab and it says proboscidian on it, which is like pretty cool.
Yeah.
And that seemed like magic to me, but the paleoecology of soil is crazy.
Yeah. You can really see who's coming and going and it, you know, it has the potential to be a huge game changer because you can just get this sort of cross section through time about who was coming and going in this area.
They talked about in that video, like hyena feces, right? There was something about that drew it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I did watch it. Yeah.
Lots of stuff. You watched the first minute.
But yeah, that's great, especially those big caves like that, because there's so many other animals and critters that come in there. Never said critters in my life, but go in there and like eat and defecate and like that stuff would be all over the place too. But Denisova and DNA is pretty distinct, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I. It's interesting. It's interesting. There's so much maths involved in ancient DNA that it's difficult for me to wrap my head around. To be honest, I'm not strong in maths. I would love to know more about that. I would love to know like how much it stands out and all of that. And but it's so much maths and so many models and algorithms. It's really a lot of science. When you really get into it, it goes straight over my head. But I would love to know more.
It's fascinating stuff. And there's a student doing zooarchaeology by mass spectrometry here at Wyoming, that's essentially you take down and you break down the protein collagen of bone and compare its mass, because you can understand, like, you put it in a mass spectrometer and figure out its mass of the isotopes and the peptides, whatever the science is there, and compare that. Yeah, then you have a bunch of like fox, deer, mammoth, dog, put that into a thing, and like the mass on average for a fox equals this. So when they broke that bone needle down, put it into the machine, it came back as like fox. Which is like, you're basically doing chemistry and physics at that point and not archaeology, but all of that becomes archaeology because you're using it to it's a puzzle, you know, of the past, which is fascinating. So yeah.
That bone needle was a popular video for you.
It was. Thank you. Even though I put the little intro in the beginning, which you loved. it did well. I need to do that format again. And I was about to ask you too. Do the 20-minute ones for you do best, or do the long ones do good? Because that one was an hour and it did the best for me, but I feel like it's too long.
I think my videos, I think there is a somewhat of a trend where the longer my video is, the more popular it is.
Okay.
Yeah, it's, I want to make half an hour videos at a minimum, but it is tricky. Sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm waffling on so much, but...
Because speaking of comments that I get, like, so I, when I edit myself doing these podcast ones, I'm like, man, I take forever to get to the point of what I'm saying because I have a million examples in my head. And then somebody commented, he was like, love the stuff, but you take forever to get to the point. And I like laid there at night being like, damn it. But in some of those episodes, like some of those podcasts, I just do it to fill the hour. But like the Bone Needle one, I probably could condense down to a little shorter, but I want to get back to doing like good, well-researched, like well-presented videos again that aren't just podcasts.
Yeah.
But those ones seem to do the best, but there's so much work where it's easier for me to just sit down and talk and yap.
Yeah. That's the hard thing. I mean, yeah, I would love to make every video an hour long, but sometimes that means you have to pick a big topic in a way. Like, you have to pick a topic that can go on for an hour. And like you said, it's hard to do the work. It does just take more work. It's hard to produce content like that on a schedule. I'll put it that way. That's what it's hard to do.
Yeah, I feel you there. Cause like yours are really well researched. You do have an editor. Do you have a writer sometimes too?
No, every video is written by me.
Nice. Okay.
Sometimes I've used a writer, but I found that that's the part that I like to do the most. So
right.
I keep
that's like your flair. Yeah. Cause you crank them out, man. And they're always consistently good and interesting. And like something I'd love to do more of is how you add music to it. And like, it kind of seems like a little news documentary.
Yeah.
And like those little thoughtful touches, at least I understand, takes a lot of work. I don't know if the audience realizes how much extra work that is, but it's good stuff. So I can see why you would want to do that weekly. And
this is one thing that I need to toot my own horn about.
Toot away, dude.
I'm going to toot my horn here. So everyone blur the camera. But, I try so hard to get accurate footage. Like, for example, in my last video about people cut their fingers off in the Paleolithic. There's a question whether people deliberately cut their fingers off. And I use the example of this tribe in Papua New Guinea called the Dani tribe, who do, mainly women, but sometimes men too, cut their fingers off, cut a digit of their fingers off when they've lost a loved one.
I've heard that.
And when you see clips of the people in Papua New Guinea, they're really the Dani tribe. It's not just random stock footage of people in Papua New Guinea. Like the photos of the people with the fingers chopped off, those are from the Dani tribe. And when there's a scene of the people dancing and playing music, they're also from the Dani tribe. And that kind of attention to detail is really time consuming. And I think I need to even just put something on screen, like footage of the Dani tribe, just so people know, like, hey, this isn't just random stock footage. This is really thoughtfully put together as much as possible.
And now we're back. What I was going to ask you next, thank you, is I saw you were dabbling with a gorilla that was supposed to be a Neanderthal.
AI
with Sora AI. Now, was it Sora? I don't know what it was.
The Google one, whatever it's called, VO.
I'm a person who was weary of AI and like, oh, it's going to replace. Like, I don't want to. It makes me think of Vittori. Like, he works so hard. Mm-hmm. I don't want to put him out of business. I'm always going to use him. But like, there's also with the video stuff coming out now, there's no way to get a perfectly reconstructed Paleolithic village and get, you know, all the camera gear and the costumes and get it right. So in the next 5 years or so, I assume I'm going to be using like AI Clovis people village or something like that.
You will. Yes.
Where do you see that going? Because I feel like that is such a good market for teaching history because you can really make it accurate.
Well, it's obviously the future. I was actually speaking to someone this morning about this who is an animator, but they are also, their hobby is LiDAR. They like doing LiDAR things. So they fly their LiDAR drone as a hobby, but their day job is an animator for TV. And he was saying, first of all, AI is already being used in TV and we just don't know. And but at the minute they're just using it subtly. For example, maybe they filmed a shot and they don't like how it was framed. Maybe they want to zoom out, but then there would be like a black bar around it.
Oh,
they just use AI to extend the scene. They're already doing it. So first of all, we're already watching AI and we don't even know, which is which is an interesting thing. And it does kind of feel like when you take a hard stance against AI, it feels like you're a monk writing illuminated manuscripts complaining about the printed press. And yeah. I know people don't like it because of its carbon footprint and because it's to a certain extent soulless because it's not being made by a human. But he again showed me a clip of an Iron Age village that they had done in AI for a show. And he was like, it literally took 2 minutes to make an AI. And when he was an animator, that would have been a week of work animating it. And it took AI 2 minutes. And he said, it's just...
That's incredible.
And it's the kind of things... these kind of things are inevitable. Inevitable. I was actually going to make a video. You know, I was talking about, I don't know what to do for a video now. I was thinking, shall I sign up to Google's highest performing thing and just see what we can make as a historical video? Like, can we make
That'd
it
be
any
a great
good?
Video. Because it'd be like kind of funny at the same time, like what it spits out.
Yeah, because clearly it can't do Neanderthals yet, but...
Yeah, and that was just a prompt of Neanderthal. You didn't tell anything else?
No, I just said Neanderthal sitting by fire and boom, there's a gorilla.
Because, I posted something about using ChatGPT for something. I think it was about comedy. And, I had it break down Louis C.K. or, Dave Chappelle's style. And it was really crazy how ChatGPT, knew how to do that. Break down my style, which was wild to me that it could even pull that up off my YouTube.
It is crazy. It is crazy. I played around with it more than that Neanderthal video, and it has some limitations. For example, I asked it to show
fingers.
Two medieval knights fighting. And you could just tell the arm movements and how they held the weapon. It was like ridiculous. Like a guy went into battle. He was holding the axe. The axe head was pointing towards him, not the enemy.
Got to work that out.
And it just looked how they were moving and everything. It looked silly.
Right.
But that Will Smith eating spaghetti video, how long ago was that? That was only like, do you know the one I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
That was 2 years ago, was it?
Yeah. I think I know exactly what you're about to say too, because AI is bad. AI is the worst today that it ever will be. It will always be better.
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
And someone used that Will Smith spaghetti as the example.
Yeah. It's absolutely crazy how quickly it's developing. And I'm still going to use artists, but it does seem sometimes like, why am I not using this technology just for like a landscape shot of a village?
Yeah.
You know what
exactly
I mean?
Like
something like that AI, like this Iron Age village that guy showed me today, that was, in pre-production for a show and all of this stuff. You couldn't tell that it wasn't made by an animator then. Couldn't tell. And this is an animator actually using it. Like, this is how he does his job now. Their job is so already so intertwined with AI.
Yeah.
And
that's a good example, too, of it, not replacing people, because you can just use AI to help make you better at your job and more efficient.
Well, it might replace him. He was like, he just hopes he can make it till he retires.
that's fair too.
So, I mean, but what I really worry about on YouTube, the AI, it's coming, man. It's coming. They need to differentiate between content made by AI and content made by humans.
Yeah,
because it's getting to the point where it's going to be really difficult to tell it apart. Like, I see all these Vietnamese ones on my Instagram because my wife's Vietnamese. Okay. And they're so realistic, man. They're so realistic. The only thing I say they fail on is that they're almost too perfect.
Yeah.
They are too high resolution. The lighting is never bad or anything like that. Like all the mistakes you make when you're using a camera, they don't have any of, because it's all so perfect. So that is kind of the way you can tell. But we're going to get fooled by this stuff a lot. Like, we
already have been.
Yeah, I already have been.
I've shared stuff to my stories and like been like, oh, it's rough. My dad will, like, when I was at their house for a few months there, was like, he would show me something on his phone on TikTok that he saw. And he's like, I think this might be AI. And I was like, that is definitely AI, Dad. Like, it's like, it's fooling him in lifetime. But what I was going to say earlier was I posted the ChatGPT stuff, and I've been using ChatGPT to like help like condense things. Like, I write it myself, but then I have it condense it or like spell check it and make it tighter, which it does really help with that, which you can kind of do with Word already. But been doing that, and then people were yelling at me in my stories saying, like, you know, you shouldn't use AI, it uses this much water, or blah, blah, like, you know, you need to boycott it or whatever they said. And like, at this point, if you don't start using those tools or at least being familiar with them, it's going to surpass you. And you're going to be old man yells at cloud like any day now.
A little bit. Like, yeah, a little bit. I don't use any ChatGPT for writing because it's sort of like that quit. It's like the thing that AI is good at is the stuff that I actually enjoy. Like, what I want AI to do is organize all my files and do my taxes. That's what I want AI to do. Let me write.
If I could have
draw.
It organize my Dropbox, that'd be amazing.
Exactly. Yeah. So,
yeah.
I do. I don't use ChatGPT for writing, but I did. I was playing around with it a couple of months ago, and I always think about starting a podcast. No one who doesn't have a podcast has thought about it more than me. Let me put it like that. Like, I think about it all the time. And I was just out of curiosity, I asked ChatGPT for names for archaeology themed podcasts. They were so good. I was like, God damn it. These are brilliant names.
Yeah. So on Premiere, I took, like, you can, you know, download the whole text file of your transcript. Mm-hmm. And I popped that text file in the ChatGPT and said, can you write me the video description for this YouTube video? And can you give me, I think I said 7 titles. And they were all, like, such good clickbaity titles that I could never come up with myself, that I wouldn't want to, because I feel dirty using clickbait titles. But
yeah.
It is incredible, and I'm sure the podcast name is like really good.
Yeah, one I can't get out of my. Oh, no, I don't even want to say it because I still think I'm going to use it. If I start a podcast, you look at the name, just know it was from ChatGPT, which is so annoying.
But. Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's like I think of it, especially as tools like stone tools, fire, dogs. They're all tools. Agriculture. Like, AI is like a new tool we have to like learn, or at least learn how to like work around.
I think that's the difference. I think viewing it as a tool is good. People that view it as art, it's still not art to me.
Yeah. Like a guy who like makes music with it, and he's like, check this out. I'm like, that was the computer.
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like it's,
but if you're like,
it's tricky.
Have an amazing piano melody, you have the bass line, but your drumming's not good, and you have it come up with a drum track for you. I could, that's like, it, as a tool.
That's too far to me. That's too far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you still could use a drummer, a real one.
You could still try. So, for example, in the landscape shot of that Iron Age village, just to stick on that example, I can't actually do that. The amount of time it would take me to do that would be so extreme.
Yeah.
And like, I daunting. Could hire someone to do that. But now the problem is, I'm not sure if I hire an animator for a week, if they're not going to just do that. Like, this is also the problem. It's broken down the trust a little bit. Like, how do I know that the person I've hired isn't just using AI?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Especially for animation. I mean, I'm still going to use Ettore's artwork in my videos. He doesn't have to worry about that, because this is a story about humans. So I like it to be made by humans, but
clip it.
It's clip it, as I become like the number one AI channel. On YouTube.
I just said that was pretty poignant, but yeah.
But it's just, there's some moments where it's like, oh, you know, it would make my video better. And am I not using it because it's not good, or am I not using it because I fear the comments in the audience? That's an interesting one.
I saw someone on Flint's letter to Rogan or whatever the one he just put out the other day video that did really well. Someone was like, I love you, but like, please stop using AI thumbnails or something like that. And then somebody was like, that's not AI. That's just like how Flint made the thumbnail. So it's now even fooling us that way.
Well, that's people have commented that to me about Ettore's artwork sometimes. Like people have commented like AI, and it's like there's no AI involved in these videos yet.
Yeah.
Yet. I think it's really eroding trust in the whole process. It's going to totally destroy our ability to trust anything we see, which is really probably not going to work out great. Probably not going to work out great for us. That fact.
Like the ones of Biden, like that, like, and Trump too. Like, it's just, not to get political, but like just AI videos of them. And like, I saw like one with Putin and Trump dancing. Like, it just looked so real. But if they just gave a speech about, you know, nukes, we're cooked.
Yeah. Well, actually, this is funny you mentioned that. I saw the other week that the third most watched YouTube video was an AI dog video.
Was it really?
Yeah. And they got like 470 million views or something in a week or whatever. And it was a crazy pug saving a baby from an airline crash on YouTube shorts.
That's wild. But yeah, man, I was going to say, I think last year when we talked, which is almost a year ago now, you were like, just get the videos out, just do it or whatever. And since that week, that podcast, I've gotten a podcast out literally almost every week, if not every 2 weeks since then.
So nice.
What are you working on next besides the video that you might not be able to do now? What's next down the pipeline?
I got so many videos in the works.
You have a podcast in the works, sounds like.
God.
What do you want that to be, by the way?
That's the thing, I can't decide. I don't know. A part of me wants to have like a co-host so that I'm not talking to myself. Like, I feel like I talk better when I'm playing off someone.
Sure. It is easier that way.
Yeah. So I don't know. What I would love to have the podcast so that I could sell out on the podcast and put all my adverts and sponsorships there and not put them in my YouTube videos.
That's brilliant.
That's what I would love to do.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah.
Because people are used to that. Yeah.
People are more used to that. And when you're talking for an hour or 2 hours, it's a bit less obtrusive to be interrupted with an ad read than when you're watching for 15 minutes.
Right.
So
that's true.
I mean, just that I want to sell out this, you know, I don't want to sound terrible, but I just think that would make the YouTube viewing experience better on my videos.
Right.
And it's fun to have a more free flowing conversation. And so obviously it'd be about history and archaeology and the past and evolution and all of this stuff. Yeah. It's just, it's difficult to produce. It's difficult to get guests. It's a lot. Getting a guest like every week, I have to find 50 guests in a year. That's a lot.
It is a lot. Yeah. And then I guess you do it in person in a studio.
Well, I'd probably just do it here. This would probably be what it looks like.
Fair enough.
I'm already renting this studio. I can't afford to rent a separate one.
True. Yeah. Congrats on the studio, by the way. Because ideally, I'd like to get kind of like how Flagrant or any of those podcasts do it, or, you know, Rogan, I guess the main one, like just have the guests come to me, but that's like way down the line.
Yeah. I think the problem is I need to not live in Portland if I want that, to be honest. Not that Portland isn't nice, but if you're going to do that kind of show, you basically have to live in New York, London, you know, LA. You have to live in a city where there's a lot of interesting people all the time.
Right.
Constantly coming through.
Or you got to be flying them in. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's expensive. Yeah. It'd be better if they were just, I certainly don't have the budget for that. That's for sure.
No, me neither.
So, I mean, you can get by with Zooms. Alex O'Connor, the Within Reason podcast, he just does a lot of Zoom podcasts. So you can do it. He's very successful.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say the fact that I'm doing it online would stop me, but
you want to be interviewing like experts and like other archaeologists and stuff?
I would like it to be a little bit of a mixture. Yeah. Some expert interviews, sometimes maybe my dad with right. you. Not that you're not you're a dog expert, but
like
do a whole
take
episode
your shoes
of you
off, cats. Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I like Take Your Shoes Off a lot. I think I saw that you liked one of his
Yeah, I like Take Your Shoes Off, yeah.
Well, I like that format. Yeah. Because he interviews his dad, calls him all the time.
All the time, man. And his uncles.
Yeah. He's got a dog. I should get him on. Probably not. He's busy.
Like that. Something like that. But it's just, man, it's so hard to produce. And the other part of me feels like, would it be worth putting all that effort into the podcast instead of just putting all that effort into more YouTube videos? Because I've already got such a big audience on YouTube.
Yeah.
Like, why do that instead of a YouTube video every week? Do you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, the last one I did with you on here, I know the Ruins ones always did well, but I think the podcast, it has like 40,000 views, which is a lot for my channel.
Yeah.
So people want to hear you talk. So, and I always get comments like, he seems like such a nice bloke.
Oh, cool, blimey. What a nice bloke.
I could have a beer. And I even see on other channels, like someone on a Meat Eater video had commented that they wanted to get you on there. And
Meat Eater.
Might have been a Flint Dibble video, and they were like, you should get Stefan Milo on or something. It was something like that. Or it was Rogan. It was a bunch of Rogan comments being like, you should get Stefan Milo on. He seems like a nice, chill guy or something like that. So
yeah,
all that to say, people, I think, do enjoy your personality.
Well, I don't blame them one bit, but I'm joking.
And you're funny. So yeah.
I don't know, you know, and yeah, there's a part of it is as well, like this kind of communication is a lot more vulnerable than a scripted video.
Well, I say things a lot that I cut out immediately. I might cut out the thing about the ice dogs.
Just yeah. Like, yeah. But I sort of, this what has made me, and I've just, tried to start several podcasts and I failed because, or pulled out because I just didn't like how I was coming across. And it was actually watching an episode of Take Your Shoes Off where Rick Glassman was saying he also used to feel the same way until he came to the conclusion that, you know, how he presented himself in that hour, 2 hours, isn't him as such. That's just how he was in that 2 hours. And, you know, there's all sorts of things that go through people's minds, you know, whether you're hungry, thirsty, what's happened in your day. Like how you are in that 2 hours isn't necessarily how you are all the time.
Yeah.
And I do feel like we're living in a time period where the things people say are so overanalyzed. I don't know. It's really, and I'm guilty of this too. I don't mean to say I'm above this. I'm certainly not, but yeah, maybe I just need to relax and just accept you can't please everyone all the time and just have like a relaxed conversation. You know, I'm not hurting anyone. Do you know what I mean? Like a part of it is just my own self-consciousness holding me back.
I completely understand. Yeah. And like another guy put it in, I bombed really bad at a big open mic in Nashville, like with a bunch of the like big comics are there. And it was, I didn't want to quit comedy, but I was just like that. I might not come back for like a few weeks. Like one of the guys pulled me aside and he was just like, dude, like no one here is going to remember that 2 weeks. Like they might chuckle while they're doing the dishes on like, you know, man, he bombed. But like they're not going to like, when you come back up, be like, this guy sucks. Like, it's like, they want to hear you do it again. Oh, it was bad. But yeah, and that kind of stuck out to me too. Like I might have a podcast where I hate the way I looked in it, or like I sounded dumb, or like I went on too long, but that was like six of them ago. No one's going back. I mean, they are watching them every day, but I don't think that same person's going to go back and like be like, yeah, he sucked. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you do have a big following, so that does come with it, and you will get the negatives.
But I will. But I think I've just got to, I don't know. I think I will give it a go. I think
yeah.
I will give it a go. Just know, only the David Ian Howe listeners will know when they see my podcast and see the name of it, it was ChatGPT.
Fair enough. Well, on that note, man, we can end it there. We got enough clips for us to get yelled at 2 years from now when we're wrong.
Yeah.
And get your podcast from ChatGPT. And anything else you got down the pipe coming up? I know people can find you at Stefan Milo for sure.
That's it. Yeah. I would say check out the YouTube channel. There's lots of cool stuff in the works. Something cool will be out by the time you've watched this video. Go check it out.
That's a great endorsement. All right. And on that note, we will, that's it. So yeah, follow Stefan at Stefan Milo. You're on History Smilo on Instagram.
Yeah.
And please rate and review the podcast. Please hit the like button on YouTube. That really helps now. And if you're listening on Spotify, comments, hit like, whatever you got to do. And thank you, Passion Planner. Cool. All right. And we're out.
Archaeology Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. And our chief editor is Rachel Roden. The Archaeology Podcast Network was co-founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle in 2014 and is part of Cultural Media and DigTech LLC.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.